from the Twin Peaks Studios. Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
God, I love this so much. Tick, tick, boom! Appreciate you hanging out with us. In the Loop, Sports Radio 610. John Lopez, Figgy Fig, and myself, Reginald Atitula, having a fantastic, a swell Thursday here in H-Town. Hope you are doing the same. We'll get to around the NFL at 11:20 today, because we always make room for our guy, your guy, your favorite former Texan, that joins us every Thursday. His name is N.D. Kalu. N.D., what's happening, my man?
Man, I am good. I'm just sitting here watching Selling Sunset, and this must be the football version because Johnny Manziel's on it, and then what's his name? Deshaun Watson was on this
episode.
Oh wow!
I've seen some clips from that too.
and you know what's crazy? I hate to, and don't worry, I'm not going to give you my whole segment talking Selling Sunset.
No, it's all right.
But what's all jokes aside, I actually felt worse for Deshaun Watson when I saw him on the episode than I did for Johnny Manziel. And dude is coming off a historic signing for a contract. Like, it just goes to show, like, without your rep, it doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Johnny went through a lot, too, man.
And
Johnny,
exactly.
And I still felt worse for with everything Johnny went through. Like, when I was watching the episodes, when I saw Johnny Manziel, I was like, huh, that was cool. I didn't know he was going to be on. But when I saw Deshaun Watson, you know, my first thoughts are rub and all the women that he, you know, supposedly violated. And I was like, man, that kind of sucks that's the first thought. It wasn't NFL quarterback. It wasn't $250 million guaranteed. It was him in the fetal position asking somebody to rub his bunghole. So it was just... Yeah, I just feel bad for his ref.
Oh, Andy Kalu joining us on In the Loop. All right, so let's get to you know, Wednesday and Thursday is when we really start looking forward more than anything.
Yes.
You know, on these weeks here on In the Loop, and we started the show, and I'm like, man, the whole concept and sort of prospects of this offense changed overnight with what Joe Mixon did. And I want to get your thoughts on that, because all this talk, and look, we're all drinking the Kool-Aid right now. Andy, you know that. I know you're a big Kool-Aid drinker too when things are going well, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yep.
But I'm thinking this offense, I'm not going to say historic, you know, because time will tell, but this offense, the possibilities just seem endless right now, man.
No, as far as the possibilities and the ceiling, you could say it's the highest it's ever been. And I'm not forgetting about the time when you had Arian Foster, you had Andre Johnson, you had arguably the best offensive line when you had Wade Smith, Chris Myers, Eric Winston, all those guys. You know, but they have to get it done. You know, it's only week one. Unfortunately, in the NFL, every week somebody goes down. What I like about this offense and the weapons is that you're going to have games where Joe Mixon may only have 50, 60 yards rushing, but that also is going to be the game where Tank Dell goes for over 100. Mm-hmm. But then you're also going to have games where even Diggs or Nico Collins, who had a great first game to this season, has only 50 yards receiving. Then Joe Mixon is going to, do what we saw with the first game. I just like the depth and weapons, not just at a certain position, but just all your playmakers. How many times have y'all even talked about Dalton Schultz this week? Like, there's going to be a game where, you know, he's the player of the week with 90 yards receiving and two touchdowns. So I just like all the different options that they have.
Andy, I kind of want to go to the defense in some ways, because the kind of some heroes that I don't know have gotten a ton of due, although I think people have tried to make sure to shout them out. The interior defensive linemen on this team, when you talk about Fatu Kasi and when you talk about Mario Edwards, for one, like, from your perspective, how impressive was that showing, making sure to handle the middle of that defense? And two, like, do you feel like the pressure that they were able to get is something that's sustainable, or does that feel like that was kind of more of a, all right, outstanding job, but that's not necessarily something we should expect week in, week out?
No, not at all. Great question. I don't think that's the outlier at all. Similar to what I said about the offense, you could say about the defense and a defensive perspective, where going into the game, you know, my initial thoughts, Danielle Hunter, Will Anderson, you know, what's their stat sheet going to look like? And they have two sacks, and the two sacks come from your interior guys. And next week, or this upcoming week when they play the Chicago Bears, who's going to be surprised if there's three sacks and it's split between Hunter and Jerry Hughes and Will Anderson? So you have so many options, and you have so many guys that can actually make plays. It was refreshing to see that the interior guys got the love and they got the stats. But more importantly than what we saw against the pass rush, I mean, they held Jonathan Taylor to less than 4 yards rushing, less than 50 total yards. And that was one of my question marks coming into the regular season, was the run defense. Mm-hmm. And to hold such a great running back to, you know, to those numbers, I thought that was even more impressive than your two guys getting the sack, your two inside guys, I should say, getting the sacks.
I'm interested as well on the defensive side, the two rookies, Kamari Lassiter and Kalen Bullock. And Reggie and I have been talking about this. Like, I'm a big fan of what Kamari Lassiter has done. At the same time, if it wasn't for Anthony Richardson missing a pass or two, these two guys might have been smoked, a time or two more. How would you evaluate the two rookies?
You know what? They look like rookies at points. And, there was a couple of players where I was like, whew, thank God they didn't connect because they would have been exposed. But the best of the best cornerbacks and safeties and defensive backs, they get exposed at points. I think this was a great learning experience for them, and they're going to continue to get better. Even with Bullock's interception, a buddy of mine, one of my former teammates, he played most of his career in the Colts. And, you know, he texts me like, oh, he got that because the receiver slipped. Well, he still made the play. Like, he still made what I thought was a heck of a catch and still was able to produce. And that's what you want. You want playmakers. You want guys who can produce when they have the opportunity. And that's what you have in these two guys.
We're talking to our guy, ND Kalu, right here in the Loop Sports Radio 610. And you've played some primetime games in your time in the league. This team, funny enough, seems like they haven't for quite a bit. Like, probably first primetime game since 2019. So Sunday night, like, is going to matter a good amount to the organization, but I think to a lot of these players, what really is the difference? Because, I mean, we could kind of hypothesize on it, but being on the field, I imagine you get a feel for it. What ends up being the real difference in a primetime game like this one that's coming up on Sunday?
You know what's interesting about that? And every player is different. So, you know, I can't speak for all 1,800 players. I actually didn't like primetime games. And we played in a lot when I was starting and during our heyday in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. I didn't like waiting all day because, like, you wake up anxious. You wake up like, man, let's get on the field and bust some heads. And then it's like, oh, let's wait 8 hours. You know, let's wait 8 hours and watch all these other games. But I will say this, Reggie. As soon as you step on the field, you step on the turf, the lights are on, and you know that you're literally the only football game in this great country. Like, that kind of just re-energizes you, and you really get hyped knowing that, man, if you like football and you want to watch some football, this is the only game in town. That there's some excitement there. And for the organization, for the ownership, for, you know, what the McNairs have done over the last couple of years, they get to display to the nation. So I think it means a lot. I don't know if I should say more, but it means a lot, not just to the players, but the people who've helped this brand, and they've helped, take the Houston Texans out of that laughingstock zone where people actually respect them now. I mean, they're, in my opinion, they're a top five team in the NFL right now. It's very early, but now you get to put that on display. But for players, I think some love it. Some love playing under the lights, knowing they're the only game in town. Other guys are like, man, I don't care if we play at 11 a.m., 11 p.m., just roll the ball out there and let's play.
Yeah. You mentioned the run game was one of the things you were keeping an eye on, maybe a concern. But I think a lot of that, obviously Joe Mixon, but Kenyon Green and Juice Scruggs, man. I mean, this is developing, obviously a lot of football left, but this is developing into quite the story on the interior offensive line. What did you see from those guys?
No, I love that. There's only a handful of running backs in the history of the NFL where you say, the offensive line doesn't matter. But anytime I see a good running back or with some good stats, it's because of those big dudes up front. And many times it's those guys in the middle. So for Kenyon Green, I love the mental toughness. You know, for him to go through, the injuries, the whispers of, you know, did they spend too high of a pick on bringing him in, and to play the way he played in the preseason and in the first game, it's exciting. And Joe Mixon will probably be the first one to tell you, hey, I don't have 130 yards if those guys up front aren't blocking for me and creating these huge holes for me to run through. But, yeah, I think the most important part of the running game is not the running back. It's the guys up front. So that's a testament to those guys when you have a running back over 130.
We're still talking to our guy, ND Kalu, former Texan, and one of our good friends here in the Loop. And ND, I think the strength-on-strength matchup that we're looking at here with the Texans and the Bears is Texans offense versus Bears defense. Particularly, it seems like there's been a lot of love given to that defensive secondary. I mean, what excites you about this matchup? What are you looking for, and what will you be watching Sunday when it comes to that matchup?
That's a big one, but just how they're going to attack a rookie quarterback. You know, you don't want him, in my opinion, to get comfortable. Like, we've seen him on the collegiate level, which is an entirely different level than the NFL, but we've seen some special plays, and you don't want him to get that confidence early. I'm really looking forward to see how many different blitzes and how many ways and different ways they try to disguise the blitzes to make sure he doesn't get comfortable. If I'm a defensive coordinator, if I'm a head coach, and I'm playing a rookie quarterback, I don't care how great he is, he's going to have to prove to me that he could mentally handle the blitzes. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how they're going to attack him and how they're going to try to get in between his ears.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to ask you about, because you mentioned this earlier as well. Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter, they got to be chomping at the bit with the expectations that we've had. Now, I'm not saying they played, you know, poorly. They did not. But that's got to be, you know, probably topic number one on the defensive side on the line of scrimmage, getting those two guys active, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, now when you talk about putting pressure on the quarterback with those two guys, that's just, hey, win your one-on-one matchups. But I'm also expecting, John, to see, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Jalen Petrie has the first sack of the day, you know, first sack of the night, because they put him in on a nickel blitz or they try to disguise something. But, no, guys like Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter, they're chomping at the bit every game. I don't care if it's Caleb Williams or Tom Brady. Like, those guys, they're so great. They just want to get after who's ever under center. But I'm really excited just to see what type of games. And who knows? D'Amico might say, I just think my front five is better than their front five. Let's just go at it, and we're not going to get too creative. But I've always been of the belief, and that's the Jim Johnson way of approaching the defensive scheme. When you have a young quarterback, you really attack him with the blitzes. And you know what? If he picks up three in a row, then you say, okay, let's get our defensive backs to backpedal instead of coming forward, because he's proven that he understands the different schemes out there.
With this Bears defense that's coming in, there's some names on here, some dudes that can really make do some damage. Montez Sweat coming off that left edge. Obviously, Jalen Johnson, Kevin Byard, Jaquan Brisker, all in that defensive secondary. Like, there's some names, but I do wonder, with the way that this Texans offense has played, is there a defense in the world or in the league right now that really gives you pause? Because I'm still feeling pretty positive, even knowing that this Bears defense has been very good.
I'll say, because no matter what team you're playing, it's the NFL. So there's going to be some names on every single team, except maybe Carolina. But I'm sure if you look close enough, you'll maybe find, this guy was good back in junior high. But when you look at the team, there's always going to be some names. But as far as a team that gives you pause, I'm still going to go with Pittsburgh. Like when I know they play Pittsburgh in the preseason. But, man, I saw T.J. Watt. I saw a couple of moves, and I was just like, okay, he's in rare form. And Pittsburgh, no matter how bad they may be as a team, they're always going to have that stout defense. They're always going to have that culture that, hey, we may be 500 as far as our record, but we're going to hit you in the mouth. So that would be one defense that, you know, not that I would pause, but I would really keep an eye to see how they're going to handle that.
Okay, so what I heard is that you're not worried about the Bears at all. That's what I did hear. I want to make that clear.
So what did stand out to you? Because another thing that I mentioned with these guys, I believe yesterday, is I feel like the Texans are the second, you know, again, just basing it on week one. You put the Chiefs in their own category. I think the Texans, I mean, the Ravens, who knows? You know, we know they're capable. We know what Lamar Jackson can do. Buffalo, it seems like it's going to have to be the Josh Allen show and go on down the line. I feel like the Texans, in terms of completeness after 1 week, have to be up there right behind the Chiefs.
For AFC or the whole league?
AFC, I'm sorry. Yes, AFC.
I can't disagree. I mean, I can't. And here's the thing. You know, you have people who take this too serious and they forget it's a game. Oh, power rankings are stupid. No, they're not. They're fun. Like, they're fun to talk about. Every week they're going to change. And after week one, I mean, it's hard for me to put the Texans lower than three, in my opinion. So, like you said, Kansas City's number one. Even though Baltimore, man, Lamar, and I'm a Lamar fan, but there were some throws. I was like, good God. Yeah. Like, I don't care if you are a dual threat quarterback. Like, you have to make that throw. You have to make that play. So there's a little inconsistency there. Josh Allen, I think he's one of the more underrated players in the NFL, and I think he can carry a team. But it'll be hard for me to put a team outside of Kansas City above the Texans. And with Kansas City, it's just kind of like that Michael Jordan effect.
Yeah.
Even if they look bad, it's like, you got to beat them. You know, you got to beat them for you to leapfrog over them in the rankings. So now I'm with y'all. I mean, I don't know if both of y'all agreed, but top three AFC, I got to have the Texans there.
Yeah, we're both in agreement there. ND, before we let you go, and I'm going to do this thing again where I bring up the Nigerian-ness that we have on the air. you've done media in this space. I generally was thinking about this morning because Fatu Kasi, I was thinking about him and his play. How obligated do you end up feeling on pronouncing a name like in the fullness of its being? Because I was like, Folorun Shaw, is like, do I need to do that, or am I just going to lean into the Foley of it all?
You know what? That's a good question. I always felt like I had to do it because no one else would.
Yeah.
And here's the thing about Nigerian names. And both my parents, you know, born, raised in Nigeria before going to London University and University of Texas San Antonio. So they are Nigerian. There's some names, though, when I say, hey, how do I pronounce this? They'll scratch their head and be like, ooh. You know, like they'll, you know, they'll write it out and make sure I pronounce it. But the one that always kills me, Reggie, that I hate that the actual players never correct it, when people say Okafor and it's Okafor, where the R is pretty silent.
Yeah.
And then I actually had other radio hosts on other stations try to correct me when I said it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, what type of colonizing mind is that? That you're gonna tell me how to pronounce this name? Like, the R is silent, but I'm like, I can't blame them. I gotta blame the player for it. And Okafo is not even that hard of a name.
Yeah,
no,
but
yeah.
Like, if you could pronounce Mike Krzyzewski, like, figure out a way to pronounce Okafo, right? But to answer your question, I always felt like I owed it to the Nigerian community and just people in general to make sure I pronounce their entire name correctly.
I got that a lot with Adetokunbo, Giannis, because he has the Greek, all of that happening. People are like, no, that's not how you say it. I'm like, it is. Let me tell you. When it comes to Nigerians, that's absolutely how you say it. When it comes to Nigerians, there's none better than my guy, ND Kalu. We appreciate you joining us every Thursday, getting us right before game day.
I appreciate y'all. I look forward to speaking with y'all next
Thursday. Yes, sir. That's the man, man. I always enjoy having that conversation. I think I might be establishing a trend where I have to come up with some level of Nigerian-ness in question.
You better.
I don't know.
Well, on the name thing, I always like hit, you know, Spanish names. It depends on who I'm talking to.
Yes.
Like, if I'm talking to another Hispanic, I'll say Yuli Gurriel. If I'm talking to Figgy, I'll say Yuli Gurriel.
That sounds like code switching to me, brother.
Hey, man, sometimes you got to code switch.
Yeah.
Sometimes you just have it's a reality of life. So you will get the Folorun Shaw, Fatu Kasi. Yeah, you're going to get all that here in Loop Sports Radio 610. All right, man, we made sure to get our guy Andy on, but that means we still need to get back around to Around the NFL. So that's what we'll do next. Around the NFL, let's talk about what's happening, including getting you ready for Thursday Night Football, a real big matchup in the AFC. We'll do that next.